people in the middle and lower middle class are really struggling right now for at every level. How am I going to heat my home? How am I going to feed my family? How am I going to pay for health care under Obamacare? And two things are happening right now out of the White House. Number one is the minimum wage is going to kill an estimated 500,000 jobs if we hike it to $10.10 an hour. Number two, their money is being blown on crazy programs like the $1 million we'll buy back your wood stove program here in Massachusetts. Here to discuss all of these things is Véronique de Rougie. You read her. I read her at National Review online all the time. I'm a huge fan to the point of stalking her, and she has foolishly agreed to join us on the air again. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Could you? I just want to talk about something broadly before we get to the specifics about the government waste that you pointed out in your brilliant piece today. I don't think that the people that kind of hang out in the, you know, economist, political, you know, white collar circles, I don't think they understand how much Americans are struggling on basic stuff. I don't think they get how much $10.10 an hour means to a small employer who uses, you know, say high school kids to meet his margins so he can pay his rent. Do you see that disconnect that I think I perceive?
Yeah, I absolutely see it. And what's also more interesting is how many economists actually are willing to throw away a basic concept of economics, which is that the demand curve is sloping downward, right? Mm-hmm. And that if you actually make something more expensive, people are going to demand less of it. And like with all the talk about increasing the minimum wage is not going to have any impact on the way employers are going to hire. I mean, it's just this baffling.
And you mentioned about the demand curve. When people are out, trying to run a small business, and more of what would be in their pocket to invest in their business or to save for their retirement or to take their family on a vacation has to go to healthcare costs for employees, which it eventually will, or for healthcare costs for themselves, or for higher wages, that money is gone, and it's gone from that person who's already shown they want to use money well, as opposed to maybe me when I was 19, Véronique, I would use it, you know, to sneak beer and hang out with my buddies. You know what I mean?
No, I see what you mean. And the thing that's also kind of like surprising about this push for an increase in the minimum wage is how it seems that people are totally comfortable with meddling with people, businesses, and with the market by imposing, you know, a floor of how much you and dictating employers how they should treat their employees. But rather than actually say, really, I mean, if you really think this is the role of the government, why doesn't the government just give money to these people? They prefer just utter interference with the market,
right.
And that is just really stunning.
When people say, as Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius said, economists all agree there will be no job loss from Obamacare and from the individual mandate, et cetera, and from the incentives to not work. Is she getting it right?
No, she's not. In fact, she's not. I mean, these guys were also the one who said all economists agree that passing the stimulus bill in 2009 is a great idea. It's not true. First, I mean, I'm willing to put a lot of money that there's not an issue where you can find all economists to agree. I think that's one of the problem with the way economists do economics these days, which is like we do more empirical research, but that means you can masturbate the data in every possible way, so you never get a full, complete answer. But it's complete nonsense. There's not an issue, especially these issues like raising the minimum wage, mm-hmm. whether the stimulus works or not, where there is actually a consensus among economists.
We're talking to Véronique de Rougie, an economist at George Mason University at the Mercatus Center. And you have a great piece at National Review. And I saw this headline. And my eyes almost popped out of my head, Véronique. $100 billion in improper welfare payments. This must be a typo.
No, it's not a typo. Even when I was writing it, I had to go back. And when I was putting the data, I do this weekly chart, right?
Right.
And so I'll tell my research assistant, look, there's this data here. It seems interesting. Why don't we do this? And when she came back with this chart, I was like, you're kidding. That must be like over 10 years. And mm-hmm. no. And of course, I don't know what I was what I was thinking, of course it is the case. I mean, we hear about there is that much waste and improper payment in the government, and it is not new. I mean, the GAO and OMB, they report about this waste. Yes, $100 billion
every single year. Let me ask you, give me an example of an improper payment, because that's a phrase that normal people don't use in everyday life. What do you mean by an improper payment
of
our tax dollars?
So Medicaid, let's say, so for instance, in 2012, $19.2 billion were sent improperly to people who were not legitimate beneficiaries, right? So it means people who did not qualify, it's mostly people who didn't qualify, or people who didn't even ask for it but then got a check. And things like this.
So in other words, someone goes in, they pay their own bill, which is a nice thing for them to do, and then unsolicited, we send them some money.
Yes. Well, usually it's actually hospitals
exactly.
and doctors get this money. And three of the top improper payments, by the way, in terms of dollar amounts, are in healthcare. It's Medicare fee-for-service, Medicaid, and Medicaid Advantage. That's the one we call Part C. And so it's got to make you wonder what it's going to look like when you add the gigantic expansion of Obamacare and right. all these subsidies that are supposed to be paid too.
In other words, we've got $19 billion in Medicaid mispayment right now, and we're bragging about shoving millions of more people onto Medicaid, which
yeah.
means million more opportunities to overpay, mispay, et cetera.
But
and of course,
Medicare fee-for-service is like close to $30 billion every
incredible.
Single year.
And we see it on 60 Minutes where they do the investigative reports where the doctor is a doctor and he has all these people getting Medicare for ailments and none of it's legit. It's all a scam. We have the problem here in Massachusetts, Veronique, where when we bust drug dealers, many of them are asking judges for special treatment because they're on disability. They're on Social
yeah.
Security disability.
Yeah.
And they had one town where they busted four guys on the same street corner. They all had disability, all through the same doctor, all with the same lawyer, because
yeah.
it was part of the let's milk the taxpayers system.
No, I agree. But the big surprise for me in that data was the improper payment for the earned income tax credit,
mm-hmm.
which is basically the tax credit that low-income workers get. So they'll pay the payroll tax, and then they get a credit back.
Right.
And there's a I'm going to do a follow-up post because there's a Treasury report that came out specifically on this. Because it's a smaller amount of money that is improperly paid through this program.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like $12.6 billion.
Right.
But that's 22.5% of the entire payment made.
So that's almost a quarter of all the earned income tax credit money goes to the wrong
yes.
person. And I know who some of those people are. Some of those people are people who are not working legally in the United States and are therefore not entitled to it, and they're getting it anyway, which is part of
the... What's interesting, about the Treasury report is it actually acknowledges that a lot of the improper payments are the direct result of the extreme complexity of the tax law,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's fraud. They're intentional fraud through tax preparers and things like this.
Right.
And there's a confusion among eligible claimants. So people who think they are eligible make a demand and get the money.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a significant amount of improper payment that is directly the product of the complexity of the tax code.
We're talking to Veronique DeRougy with George Mason University. I want to ask you about one more thing, I'm kind of throwing this at you blind, but I think it's an interesting economic model. The EPA has made 80% of the current wood stoves in the United States illegal. Shockingly, Veronique, the federal government is also offering a buy back your wood stove program
yeah.
and spending millions yeah. of dollars. What would an economist describe? How do you describe a deal like that?
It's the government making an arbitrary decision mm-hmm. about what people should do and can do. And it's, it, it's utterly distorting the incentive. So there's a reason why people are still using these type of stoves.
Yeah.
Because they would have a gigantic cost to replace them, or it is maybe the cheapest way to get warm.
That's right.
And the government is saying, well, no, you can't do this. And,
well, I just love the part. I love it. It's like the cash for clunkers thing. It's not just that they want you to get rid of what you got. They're going to take my tax money and buy your piece of the thing you can't have anymore and give you money, and then they're going to go destroy. None of these can be resold or to like another country or whatever. They have to be destroyed, Veronique.
You have to wonder when they're going to make fireplaces illegal.
Yeah, very good point. And what is the difference between a fireplace and a wood stove? I don't know the difference either. But the reason they're not making fireplaces illegal is because they politically can't, and that's the difference. But you recall Cash for Clunkers. It had no net
impact. I mean, it was a total – it did not achieve any of the outcome. Remember, it was to stimulate the economy. The idea was like to make people – turn their old car and force them, and not force them, but like give them an incentive to buy a more expensive car. It didn't, and then that would inject money into the economy and stimulate the economy. That didn't work, and then they realized that it was horribly expensive and not effective at all. But just, it's not the first time that they find this out.
But they keep doing the same dumb thing
over and over again.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you wanted also a funny and infuriating story, like on the improper payment, right? A lot of these problems are due to complexity in the tax code for the tax credit, and that's at the time where the IRS is actually putting you on hold and not answering your calls,
right?
At a highest amount of basically. Making itself unavailable to taxpayers who want to ask a question about filing for their taxes. And the IRS response to their problem is to say, well, from now on, we're not going to answer the more complex question anymore.
But it's their IRS. It's their tax code. What do you mean they're not going to answer the hard questions?
But that's what they decided. That's their answer for the backlog and the poor quality of service is to say, well, you know what? We have this extremely complex. So you can expect that as they do things like this, they're going to continue to be more improper payment on the tax side. Anyway.
You know, this is like your teacher saying, I don't know how to answer the hard math questions. So we're just not going to grade the hard math questions anymore.
Yeah.
But of course,
yeah.
You still have to turn in the paper. You still have to take the test.
Absolutely.
That's,
and I can tell you, they will call you very quickly if you make a mistake on your taxes. And by the way, it's the same IRS that also made it, try to make it very hard for you to go see a small tax preparer by trying to make it, force them into getting a license. Right.
A license from the people who can't answer the questions.
Yeah, but thank you. Thank God a Supreme Court judge actually ruled that this was abusive interference on the part of the IRS.
We are surrounded by insane people, Veronique. Thank you so much for joining us here on this island of sanity.
You are more than welcome.
Thank you so much. She's Veronique DeRougy. You can find her on Twitter at Veron DeRougy, VeronDeRougy, or just type in something close to it, and it'll pop up on Google. But she's a great writer, and I've got her stuff up at National Review.